Welcome to Judge Hume's Big Debate. How you doing? Big hello guys to Big Daddy's in the chat room. Hello, Gary. We were overran last week and Judge sort of got stuff to spill over, but it's all very relevant. And don't forget, I'm on after Judge Hume from 8 p.m. UK time. But Judge, take it away.
Yeah, thank you, David. Good evening to Big Daddy out there. How you doing? Only saw you yesterday. Thanks for joining us tonight. Don't worry about the badger at 8 o'clock. The real show is right here and now. All those music DJs on here think they're divas and all the rest of it. That's, you've heard it all before. There'll be one on at 10 as well, by the way. I think I'll go outside and listen to my car alarm, but never mind. This is, of course, the Big Debate. I'm Judge Jim. Welcome aboard. And, of course, we've got lots to talk about as Catalonian independence intensifies. We've got stuff left over, or material left over, very relevant stuff from last week in private eye. And there's one that caught my particular... Oh, before I do that, of course, the Royal Mail update is... Yes, the Royal Mail dispute update. Apparently, Royal Mail are taking the CWU to court tomorrow in a bid. There were originally two bids. This one I find quite fascinating. They're claiming that the trade union in the dispute, the CWU, didn't inform the members of the result ballot appropriately, but that's been dropped. I mean, that was laughable, that one. If anyone does work for Royal Mail, you will know that it's been in your face probably for months now, if not almost a year. The second bid by Royal Mail at the High Court tomorrow is to get an injunction that the legally binding resolution process has not been fully exhausted properly. So off they go tomorrow. There's I don't know where what the gambling pundits are saying on this one. I've got mixed reviews today on it. So we'll have to see. Will they go to the High Court? Will they get the injunction? They're definitely going. And what will happen if they do get that injunction, or indeed if they don't? So what is that going to, where's that going to leave that particularly interesting dispute then? Will the CWU adopt their more traditional stand of maybe taking what's known as unofficial industrial action, or what will they do? It's not clear. The time for talking and resolving procedures is clearly come to an end. But of course it might go the way, and this is a third way of thinking, that if they do get an injunction, that it's stipulated not only is the procedure fully exhausted, that if within a certain time frame that's finished without resolution, that then validates the strike further. So it'll be interesting to see. Of course, an injunction might even stipulate that they are to reach a resolution without either side taking any sort of action whatsoever. And it's one of those predicaments where I bet, I'd put money on it, that neither side really wants to go to a third legally binding party to tell them how to administrate their affairs. Because of course it will set precedent, and it could, it may work out that it's in nobody's favour whatsoever, and just leaves both sides with a pup situation. Of course, another thing that could happen as well is that the judge refuses the application on the grounds that it's nothing to do with him, and it's between the employer, the employer's side, Royal Mail, and the employees' trade union. And it's for them to sort out, and thus keeping the strike ballot valid, because obviously the trade union nationally now feel that the talks are over. But there's been a lot of publicity in the Metro, Evening Standard, Financial Times, all of this week, that the chief executive, Moya Green, is of course they're calling on her, basically city analysts, city economists, big firms, hedge funds are calling on her to actually sit down and meet with the union directly instead of sending in her junior managers to deal with national offices from the union to work out an agreement to move the company forwards and we have to say, save a lot of pain. But we haven't yet to have seen that thus far. So tomorrow around lunchtime, I'd imagine, we'll probably learn of the news. So keep your eye on Twitter. I'll certainly be retweeting any news that comes through. And I'm sure, and I know, and I'm very confident that the union communication communication channels will be wide open for that news to come through. It's going to be an interesting one. It's the final hurdle to this whole dispute. Well, it's probably better than watching the FA Cup final. Anyway, Big Daddy, certainly better than watching X Factor. Big Daddy in the chat room says, if the CW win tomorrow, Moya Green and John Millage should both resign their position. Well, what do you think of that? That's what Big Daddy says in the chat room. Moya Green, John Millage, go, resign, and take Theresa May with you. You're listening to Judge Jim here. I was just about to go on to another subject. I'm not done with Royal Mail. There's not really much more I can say. But if you've got a view on it, please let me know. I know last week I was saying what makes you think that you deserve a pension if you work for Royal Mail, and of course a pay rise, and that got things working up a bit last week. But we've exercised that bit, but let's see what tomorrow's judgment brings. It's going to be very, very interesting either way. We're in a new era, a new world of industrial relations, and probably some might say this would be the leading edge in it. Okay, well, look, turning to today's Guardian. Oh, by the way, before I forget, a small tip for you racing pundits out there. I think in about, not this weekend, the following weekend, at Ascot, around 3 o'clock, check out a horse called Cracksman. It was a stablemate to Enable, which won the L'Arc de Triomphe, I think it was early part of the month. Check that out, Cracksman, 5-2, I believe. I've been led to believe on that one. But turning back to the news in The Guardian today on, I believe it's National Mental Health Day today, just to make you aware. This one really is concerning following the collapse of Monarch only last week. 2,000 jobs to go in cost-cutting drive at British, it's BAE now, isn't it? Blow to Whitehall industrial strategy, the article says. Labour says vital skills could be lost forever. And the article goes on to say this. I mean, we already lost 3,000 or so jobs with Monarch collapsing a couple of weeks ago. But this is Britain's biggest defence contractor, BAE Systems, is to cut nearly 2,000 jobs in a significant blow to the country's manufacturing sector and the government's industrial strategy. The company, which makes the Eurofighter Typhoon jet and Britain's nuclear submarine, said up to 1,400 jobs would go at its military aerospace business over the next 3 years, along with 375 jobs in the maritime services and 150 at its cyber intelligence business. For me, that's where it's at these days. The cuts are due to be made by the 1st of January of next year will affect managers as well as production line workers. BAE aims to achieve a lot of them through voluntary redundancies where possible, and it employs a staggering 83,000 people worldwide, including 34,600 in the UK alone. A substantially big employer, I would say. There will be 750 job cuts at its Lancashire aerospace bases at Samsley, Bury and Warton, where parts of the Typhoon are made and assembled. Together, they employed 10,000 people. BAE's other aerospace base in Brough, East Yorkshire, which makes parts of the Hawk, will have its 900-member workforce almost halved to 500. The cuts will be a severe blow to the region after 500 job losses at the site 4 years ago. A further 340 dockyard jobs are going in Portsmouth as part of an efficiency drive. 245 at the RAF bases at Marham in Norfolk and Leeming in North Yorkshire, and 150 in Guildford and at other cyber intelligence sites. There will be a further 30 job losses at other UK locations. Of course, this means that there's really, you know, we're putting in jeopardy here our competition to the American weapons industry, to say the least. And before long, if we keep on going like this, not are we going to lose skills, but we're going to become heavily reliant on American weapons industry, which probably is never a good thing, because there's always a kickback with that, that they have a master override from Washington into our kit. So we'll never be able to operate as an independent state in any given war. So, yeah, interesting that one. In reply to that, Britain's large union, Unite, vowed to fight what it called a devastatingly short-sighted decision. It had called on the government to save jobs before BAE's announcement. The union is considering all options, including industrial action. So be looking very closely at tomorrow's court ruling. Unite's Assistant General Secretary Steve Turner said these planned job cuts will not only undermine Britain's sovereign defence capability, he so much put it better than I did, but devastate communities across the UK who rely on these skilled jobs and the hope of a decent future they give to future generations. Incredible. Let's have a look on people texting in here. Let's see what they've got to say. Kelly's just finished her curry. Alfie says Royal Mail need to listen to the experience of the workforce. Forget some high court judge. She needs to value her employees by listening to their ballot result. Quite right too, as well. Almost 90% of Royal Mail employees chose at home without any duress to vote yes for strike action. Absolutely incredible. And not only that, what you do have to mitigate against all of that, of course, is that they voted almost 90%, but they overcame the latest round of very unfair Conservative government anti-trade union laws on top of that as well. So you put all that into context, it's just blown Royal Mail's case really out of the water. Has to be remembered, a lot of these High Court judges, as of recent times, have ruled in trade unions' favour. So, let's see. And let's remember what the role of a judge is. It's not to make the law, it's to administrate it. So, in the context of tomorrow's application, is there that stipulates that the problem-resolving process between Royal Mail and the CWU has not been fully exhausted? And that will be the question. It will come down to that. What will he rule? Because a lot of pundits say they've been in talks for almost 2 years. I would say that's fully exhausted. But if the CEO won't get involved and meet the union officials directly, what can be said? There you go. Well, what else have we got? Oh, some other story. Setting this aside, I was talking about Monarch earlier on in the programme, and of course last week, and I had a bit of a dilemma. This is a personal dilemma, and I booked this holiday with Monarch Airlines to Turkey. So in advance of that, I got my currency ready not long after that. So I got my Turkish lira, and 1,240 Turkish lira cost me £300. So I thought, well, I'd better change that back. And to change it back to UK sterling, only 2-3 weeks, not even that, maybe afterwards, they would exchange it back to me for £250. And I thought, that's a £50 drop in a matter of no time on that. So I went and looked at some websites, things like WeSwap and Fair Currency and things like that, to see if I could get a better rate. And how they operate is that you deposit money and then they forward it to someone that needs that currency. However, the problem being is they don't accept cash deposits. So on the back of that, because that's where the costs come in, apparently. So I thought what I'd do is I'll chance my arm. And you can have a look at this, because it's on there. I thought, I'm going to go on eBay and sell it in an auction, this currency. And I kid you not, it's on there, and the current bids for it at the moment is £280. Can you believe it? And there is 3 days and 15 hours to go. So you're sometimes better off, instead of taking it back to the currency exchange, actually going on eBay and putting it on there. I couldn't believe it. I even looked at people selling euros, and when you match the bids and the prices and the buy it nows to the wholesale exchange rate, people are paying well over the odds for currency on there. It's incredible. Anyway, that's enough of that old nonsense. I'll bore you all to tears, won't I? I'll probably give this now a music break, Dave, so it's back over to you in the studio.
Judge Jim's Big Debate on Trax FM.
I'll tumble for you.
Go, I
Culture Club from 1984, and I'll tumble for you. You'll listen to Jazzy Jim's Big Debate here on www.tracksfm.org. 10 o'clock, DJ Chris and the Soul House Sessions. I'm going to hand you over to the cable wires of Judge Jim again. Take it away, Judge.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. I won't be issuing any injunctions tonight, I can tell you. Right, let's have a look. What have we got here? Okay, this Catalan situation, I mean, it's... I think a lot of people in the UK don't actually understand Spanish history. In as much as what's going on in Catalonia, not at the moment, it's been going on for years. As you've all probably seen on your TV screens, they're asking for independence. Now, a lot of Brits and maybe other people around the world just associate Spain as Spain, and they don't actually realise, like the UK, arguably it's made up of some different countries that have come together over the years, and Catalonia, and I've looked at some history of the region. I say the region, it was a massive empire back in the day of the Aragon Kingdom. It's actually covered, this is a recent brief history lesson coming up here now, kids. So plug back your ear holes, including you, Gary. The Aragon Kingdom included Italy, the Balearics, southern France, and the region now known as Catalonia. Fast forward to that, not only that, they have their own separate language from Spanish. And when Franco came to power in 1938 in the revolution in Spain, he annexed Catalonia and made it a part of Spain. In that time, under Franco, 4,000 Catalans were executed. Lots were locked up as political prisoners between 1938 and 53 under Franco. They're fiercely independent in the Catalan. And a lot of them, Phil, have been reading today that because they account for something like 19% of Spanish GDP, they don't actually get their they don't feel they get their money's worth from Madrid, and that goes on to explain, I think, because I wouldn't understand this, but some of you football people out there might, that there's that tension between Real Madrid and Barcelona. Some might say, I guess, the same sort of thing between Arsenal and Tottenham, but without the skills of both sides. Okay, I think that's pretty fair enough. Or maybe QPR and Chelsea, but we won't. Well, that's really off par, isn't it? That is. But anyway, look. Getting back to Catalonia, it says they voted for independence. Their president for the Catalonian region or country, depending what side you're on. 90% was the proportion that voted to separate themselves from Spain in the referendum. So they got a 90% yes vote there, very similar to the CWU. But, however, it says in The Guardian today, only 42% of Catalonia's 5.3 million voters took part in the referendum. Currently, the president is in talks with Madrid about probably some more regional power and independence and what have you. So we'll see how that goes. And let's hope it goes peacefully, because ETA, the freedom fighters, many years ago were campaigning in violent ways and clashes for their own independence down there. So let's just hope this keeps on the straight and narrow, because really Spain is a model country of the European Union, and I don't think they'd want to lose that reputation. What's it? Big Daddy says in the chat room, Arsenal come from South London, Woolwich, Arsenal. Yeah, I think we're aware where they originally come from. I'm just trying to make an analogy that there's rivalry between Barcelona and Real Madrid, over the regions. So maybe that's what you're saying, Gary. Yeah, okay, in your own way. And congratulations, of course, for doing your first appeal yesterday. You came across as quite the barrister. And with your colour hair, if you got it permed, it would look like a barrister's wig. I think you look quite dashing in a wig and gown, Gary, when you're doing your appeal. So well done on that one. Okay, well, look, more serious stuff that rolled over from last week. And this is in the back of Private Eye. If you've got anyone in the army, and I know we have got listeners around the world that are soldiers that could well be listening to this. This is... And this was worth saving over, because we've been covering Deep Cut now for some years, and David R. being in the studio there will concur with this. It says, Deep Cut, in the back of Private Eye, on page 40, the inquest expands. The coroner conducted the fresh inquest into the 1995 death from the gunshot wounds of 20-year-old soldier Sean Benton, has agreed to look into widespread claims of bullying by non-commissioned officers at the out-of-control Deep Cut Army base in Surrey. When the new inquest finally starts in January, Judge Peter Rook, QC, will consider evidence suggesting that recruits other than Sean suffered ill treatment in the hands of instructors and NCOs. It will form a key part of his investigation into whether repealed and sustained physical and mental abuse of Sean, who was known to be vulnerable, was a factor in his death. Sean was the first of four young recruits to die of gunshot wounds at the base between 1995 and 2012. A perfunctionary inquest shortly after his death heard nothing about his treatment at the barracks and recorded a verdict of suicide. After a long battle, his family were granted a new hearing last year when the High Court found that material buried in Surrey police files cast doubt on that initial verdict. The Ministry of Defence has tried to limit the scope of the new inquest, considering only material relating directly to Sean. It said that NCOs were not on trial and did not have the same protections in the inquest. However, lawyers for civil rights group Liberty and Sean's family successfully argued that evidence not only illustrates a culture of violence and harassment at Deep Cut, but also concerns the credibility of the NCOs as witnesses. In particular, former Sergeant Andrew Gavigan, who we've mentioned before over the last couple of years. Gavigan featured prominently, in the 2006 Blake Review into the deaths as one of those who had bullied Sean, then addressing recruits in the assumed guise of what he called the nasty twin brother. At a pre-inquest hearing last week, Judge Rook said the wider evidence was capable of being called on the important issue of whether Gavigan had harassed, bullied or abused Private Benton. Gavigan denies any such conduct. Judge Rook's ruling contrasts to that of the coroner who heard last year last year's fresh inquest into the death of Cheryl James, the 18-year-old recruit who died at Deep Cut from a single bullet wound to the head 6 months after Sean. Judge Brian Barker limited the scope of that inquest to hearing only about the care and treatment of Cheryl herself had received. But even if he was scathing of the army, its lack of supervision at the base and the unacceptable abuse of power by the NCOs. While he decided, much to her family's dismay, that for more unknown reason the bubbly recruit had turned her rifle on herself, he said she should never have been placed in the dangerous situation where she could do so. Next year's new inquest is likely to hear from 150 witnesses and last several weeks. So if you want to hear more of Deep Cut, we'll be here on The Big Debate covering, as we have done, what's been going on at Deep Cut over the last couple of years. And I seem to recall as well, when I started reading the last paragraph of that about Deep Cut, that she was placed at the, I think she's 17 at the time, and there's a back entry or exit, and they stationed her there overnight with a few rounds in a rifle. I do believe that's at that point that they found her dead. They wouldn't say if it was suicide or not, though, interestingly. But there's one common denominator that keeps coming up, and I think that's fair to say that's Sergeant Andrew Gavigan. David, it's over to you in the London studio.
Contact Judge Jim's Big Debate on Skype, Trax Big Debate. Twitter, this is Jim Trax FM. Email thebigdebate@traxfm.org. Join the Trax FM chat room, www.traxfm.org. Trax FM, the original 103.3 Pirates.
In the fast lane, so high, like Amber Rose without the foreplay. Four fives, we getting money, baby, no shame. Hold tight, you're taking selfies, though you're so vain. Don't lie, you know I love it, baby, no way. Yo, oh my, you know I like the way you rotate. Close eyes, Copacabana, bring your Dolce. All eyes, it's on my lady, but it's okay. I know why, you're super wavy, baby, baby, you're my cup of tea. And I really wanna be in your company. Any good thing coming is gonna come to me when I pop in your dungarees. And again, 20, you know, undefeated. The fight is so big, my squad don't believe it. And haters gonna dislike, cheesy like Chris Light. Trippin', this is sick life, now I'm singing this like.
Oh, mamacita, come let's get more familiar. I like your style, I like your style. Hey, mamacita, come let's stay till mañana. I like your style.
Grab learning things the hard way. Close ties, you only make it if you go free. Don't die, remember starting out my own wave. Won't lie, I used to bust a baby, no train. No sky, now when you bust a baby, throw shade on those guys. You know I liked you back in no way. Oh nine, you used to call me on my house phone. Late night, my mom complaining, but it's okay. It's your time, protectfully, my baby. Baby, you're my cup of tea. And I really wanna be in your company. Cause the whole industry is trying to come for me. Plenty pictures on the gram, save some for me. Hotter than 81 degrees, yeah. None of them girls got nothing on your skis, yeah. And haters hitting dislikes, smiley with a kiss like. Scrolling through your pics like, got me singing this like.
Oh, mamacita, come let's get more familiar. I like your style, I like your style. Hey, mamacita, come let's stay till mañana. I like your style.
Anyway you like, ready when you're ready, got the Remy on the side. Since she going in, since you wanna vibe, vibe.
Yeah, yeah. Mamacita. Oh, mamacita, come let's get more familiar. I like your style, I like your style. Yeah, mamacita, come let's stay till mañana.
Baby, baby,
I like your style, I like your style.
Girl, I wanna meet you in my next life. My girl in the dark, you're my sunlight. For you, I don't want the street life. Yeah. With you, I wanna live a good life. Yeah. If we had kids, what would it be like? But tonight, let's live and enjoy life. Cause I'm on the road my whole life.
Now, Tiny Temper featuring Wizkid. I like Tiny Temper, he's good. And Mamacita, I was always trying to find out why people. What's this Mamacita track? Apparently, a lot of our club DJs are here on Trax FM. They're working clubs and they're fed up playing a track called Mamacita. And I did not know we playlisted it once. But that was before it was famous. Judge Jim's Big Debate. We discussed Catalonia and Deep Cut. Now, I've got to concur with Judge. He hasn't left it alone. And there is a Deep Cut group on Twitter who's following us on Trax FM. And they're families of the afflicted. So anyway, hand over to Judge Jim. Take it away, Judge.
Yeah, thanks, David. That's well worth a mention, that. And so is this too. Rendell joins us in the chat room. Rendell is from another station called Radio Rendell. Rendell, not Radio Rendell, but Radio Rendell. And it's worth tuning in to listen to his vibes on a Saturday between 7 and 10. And I kid you not, if women listen to that man's voice, they will become pregnant. So be very, very careful indeed if you tune in to Rendell in conjunction with Rendell Radio. That man's voice, if he doesn't get your wife, girlfriend, partner pregnant, I'm pretty sure with his voice there will be a divorce very soon. Right, getting back to the big debate. Oh, he's been with us a year now. I can just imagine him actually playing his grooves in his frilly white shirt and his leather trousers on with that voice. Bloody hell. Crikey. I bet those plants stay right up in those pots. Anyway, this one. Big Daddy, I hope you're listening to this one. This involves a place very close to you. This is in the back of Private Eye on page 40. A very unusual article this is. It's called Fatal Fantasy. While the government considers giving private firms the power to arrest citizens who fail to pay debts or fines, it might reflect on last week's grim announcement of the murder of Peter Fazoli, 58, at his bungalow in Northolt, northwest London. Fazoli, a computer repairman, was tortured for hours in January 2013 before being suffocated by Jason Marshall, 28, of East Ham, who then set fire to his home after stealing cash and bank cards. Marshall killed him for sexual gratification after making contact via a gay dating website, said Judge Nicholas Hilliard, QC. After the murder, Marshall fled to Rome, where weeks later he killed another gay man he met via a website. He was caught and sentenced to 16 years prison in Italy. Fazoli's killing would have remained undetected. He was assumed to have died in the fire. Until his nephew examined material on Fazoli's computer nearly 2 years later and found webcam footage of his uncle's torture and murder. Marshall has identified and extradited to the UK. He was sentenced at the Old Bailey last week to 39 years in prison. The court previously heard that on the day of the killing, Marshall had dressed as a law enforcement agent and was carrying handcuffs, a police utility belt, and what appeared to be a gun in a holster. He arrested his victim for being a spy, in inverted commas, and threatened him with a knife to extract his bank card numbers. In Rome, he used a similar modus operandi, that's Latin for the same way, in the killing of Vincenzo Ial, 67, and the attempted murder of Umberto Gismonde, 54. Posing as an MI5 agent and carrying the same police paraphernalia, he tied up Gismondi, who would undoubtedly also have died had he not managed to alert neighbours, causing Marshall to flee. Marshall's lawyer Thomas Quinn told the court his client had a bizarre history of impersonating police officers, ticket inspectors, and special constables. Indeed he did, as iReaders will know. Throughout the noughties, the Eye's Rotten Borough wrote numerous stories about Newham Mayor Sir Robin Wales' reckless attempts to turn the East London Borough's park wardens into a law enforcement force. In 2008, the council disbanded the Parks Constabulary after persistent complaints that poorly trained wardens regularly exceeded their limited powers, carrying ID that looked like Met Police warrant cards, illegally carrying handcuffs and batons. A major complaint was that the Keystone cops wore ex-police uniforms and could easily be mistaken for genuine police. In 2012, however, the scheme was revived. That November, A private eye revealed that a number of law enforcement uniforms had been stolen by criminals who took to the streets to issue spot fines to shopkeepers for bogus offences. The traders were easily marked because the council had already flooded the streets with law enforcement officers issuing fixed penalties. The Eye reported two council employees had been dismissed after being arrested and bailed by police investigating the scam. One of them was Jason Marshall. In August 2011, road sweeper Marshall had received an 8-month suspended sentence after admitting pretending to be a member of the British Transport Police, carrying out drug detection inquiries on the tube. Despite carrying a fake ID, and claiming to be on secondment from MI5, Marshall aroused suspicion because the sniffer dog was his pet Yorkshire Terrier. Newham, alas, had not dismissed Marshall after the 2011 conviction, enabling him to access the uniform used in the scam against shopkeepers the following year. A while on bail for this offence that he murdered Fazzoli and absconded to Italy to kill again. It was almost 2 years before Mr. Fazzoli's horrified nephew stumbled across the footage of his uncle's murder, and the true extent of Marshall's fantasies became clear. So there you go. You might want to contact your MP and canvass the idea against any law enforcement agencies that collect debts or fines having the power to arrest, because as it's already been reflected upon in Private Eye in that article alone, if that gets into the wrong hands, it could go very, very badly for people. It's bad enough, I suppose, some might argue, that the police actually have the power of arrest, but I sooner trust the police, not very much, but I do a little bit more than, say, a private law enforcement agency. And of course, is this the first step into privatising our police force in the UK? If you look at the film, I've only seen that, I think it was the late 80s, early 90s, RoboCop, the police is actually privately run in that. And in the United States, of course, they license bounty hunters as well. So watch this space. I tell you, where they think they can make a profit, they will. So, David, over to you in London for the music break.
Judge Jim's Big Debate on Tracks FM.
Told
Judge Im's Big Debate here on www.tracksfm.org. Big hello goes out to Chaz Summers. He's joined us in the chat room. Big Daddy's in there. And of course, Randall. And they're all flooding in on the server's gone mental, radio mental. I'm going to hand you over to the special hands of Judge Im. Take it away, Judge.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. As many of my regular listeners know, that I quite often use the additions of the private eye to present the show as an excellent point of reference. And of course, a lot of the information that's generated from this and whatnot is leaps and bounds ahead of anything you can normally find on the newsstand. If you're going to buy something, buy this. And we were only talking about the police a moment ago, and this is what the police were proposing to do. Now, this is called Inspector Knackered. Hertfordshire Police has been castigated by a judge. Lots of judges around this evening, one has to say, for trying to solve a case by pot luck. After the force tried to gain access to Private Eye's subscriber information in a bizarre attempt to find out which of its officers and employees are regular Eye readers. The Eye refused to hand over subscribers' private information, prompting to seek a production order under the Police and Criminal Evidence Act. At a hearing behind closed doors at Cambridge Crown Court last month, it emerged that in June a civilian member of staff at Hatfield Police Station had received an anonymous envelope via the force's internal email. It contained a joke about Islamic terrorists cut from a copy of The Eye. As Judge Farrell QC noted, the target of the joke was security services, but given that the recipient was a Muslim woman, police were treating the incident as racist and potentially an offence under the Malicious Communications Act. Detective Chief Inspector Adam Gallup said he needed to access to the Eye subscriber list as it would help narrow down who might have sent the item. However, initially asking for the names of all subscribers in Hertfordshire, Bedfordshire and Cambridgeshire, the police narrowed down their demand to the names of all subscribers in Hertfordshire. While rightly taking internal police racism seriously, the investigations fishing expedition approach to finding out who in their own ranks might have had access to a widely published item was found to be inappropriate and speculative. Private Eye opposed the application, represented in court by barrister Lorna Skinner. Quite right as well. Blimey, imagine that. They got hold of every Private Eye subscriber and labelled them as something and started. It's bad enough having the NSA on your back for broadcasting, let alone the Keystone Cops. After questioning DCI Gallup, the judge was unimpressed. He refused outright to force the Eye to hand over subscriber data, saying it was not a proportionate or reasonable application, especially given that the information was protected by a contract of confidence. His ruling pointed out that the magazine is readily available in supermarkets, railway stations, and all good news agents, and that by the time the cutting was sent, it had been in circulation for more than a week. He accused the police of taking a shot in the dark to find the sender of the cutting. And isn't that absolutely incredible that the police would want the subscriber list to a publication like that? I mean, it just beggars belief. I mean, are they getting that desperate? But of course, I understand racism and an internal investigation has to take place, but you try and get them to do something about internet bullying that goes on and trolling. I know of a certain case that I'm not allowed to talk about that's fairly local to me, and I know a lot of people involved in it, and you try and get the police to do anything about it, they don't want to know. And all they do is refer you back to social media such as Facebook for them to do something about it, and they do nothing about it. So this trolling, this harassment goes on and on and on. And if one more person says to me, well, they need to change the law to do something about it, no, they don't. It's all there, trust me. I did once convict someone back in the day in my career as a magistrate, over 13 years of harassment using Facebook. It can be done. What can't be done is that you can't bring a prosecution if you haven't got the budget to do it. And that's what I think the problem with the police is. You see, more crime, it's a new crime. There's still the traditional crime, or some of it, but there's more crime, cyber crime. And it's alarming to read that British industry is cutting back on industry in cyber crime. And you can't tell me that methods where you develop military cyber weapons and tactics and programs and software and all the rest of it doesn't assist the police in any shape or form or another, because it does. And that's what it is. So, I mean, a shot in the dark, a subscriber list, crying out loud. I mean, that's something Sherlock Holmes would probably have done in the Victorian era. Anyway, look, so that's that. Equally as worrying as well, I've crossed out the wrong one, Wally. Right, Radio Silence. We're not on about Cruise FM. We're on about something more serious than that, to do with our... well, not just national security, world security. And this is all part of the government austerity measures that go unnoticed all the time. It says, Radio Silence, news from Caversham Park, where BBC Monitoring, which listens in on radio and TV broadcasts and websites around the world for its own news editors, as well as the Ministry of Defence, Foreign Office and Intelligence Services, has slashed jobs and is to move out of its stately home, HQ, so the BBC can sell it. The move follows George Osborne, when he was Chancellor, removal of government funding for monitoring as part of his public spending cuts. Since the 1940s, when it was set up to follow Nazi broadcasts, monitoring has shared its premises and the intelligence it gathers with its US counterpart, open source enterprise run by the CIA. The partnership worked hugely to the UK's advantage. Whilst the BBC monitoring covered a quarter of the globe, OSE took care of the rest, each making information available to the other. As the Commons Defence Committee pointed out in a scathing report on the move entitled Open Source Stupidity last December, the complementary of this arrangement represents a huge return for the UK on the modest costs of the operation, which are around £25 million per annum. MPs noted that several of our witnesses warned us that the physical break with OSE was likely to have detrimental effect on the relationship, and concluded that evicting the Americans sends entirely the wrong signal at a time when the incoming US administration had voiced its concerns about the levels of burden sharing between the US and its allies in security and defence. It came to pass last week where we're told after they were kicked out of Caversham Park, next year OSE will not, as expected, shift operations to RAF Witten in Cambridgeshire. Instead, it will shut up shop in the UK entirely. Brilliant, eh? And then people wonder why, when terrorism this year has been, well, been predominant, especially during the build-up and during the general election in the early part of the summer, and yet you've closed down listening stations like that, and of course puts more reliance again on the US government. It's absolutely incredible, really, isn't it, to think that we're handing over left, right and centre our independence defence capabilities, as the Guardian said earlier. But there you have it. That's what you get if you're an advocate for austerity. So, right, what have we got up next? I don't think we've got time for a music, but we've got 4 minutes left of the show. Check out Chaz Summers on a Sunday evening. I believe it's still 5 till 7, if I'm right. So tune in now at 7 for the Chaz Summers show. Good evening to you, Chaz. He joins us in the chat room. He's showing off his pet dog there. Okay, let's have a look. There was another article here in Private Eye that certainly took my attention. It's probably, actually, hold on a minute. I normally go through the, let's have a look here. Right, okay. They do these little boxes of information. Let's go through these. Whilst David RB's gelling his hair back, ready for his show. He's putting on his finest blue dress. $650 million yearly cost of the education maintenance allowance aimed at supporting 16 to 18 year olds to stay in full-time education, abolished because the government said it was too onerous due to deeply worrying state of the public finances. Yet £11 billion cost of the public finances of the tuition fee freeze and Help to Buy package announced by Theresa May this week in a desperate attempt to win round young voters. What else have we got? Oh, blimey. Right, here we are. Number crunching again. 42.3% of electors who managed to register votes in Catalan in the Catalan independence referendum, despite Spanish police raiding polling stations and confiscating ballot boxes and papers. Ah, that's not, that wasn't mentioned in the Guardian earlier, and I'll have to withdraw my statement about a model country of the EU on that. 41% of electors who managed to register votes in the last 10 UK parliamentary elections, which did not suffer the same problems. That's 41%. Incredible, isn't it? Some people just can't be bothered, I guess. Unless you're a CWU member, of course. Number crunching, 860,000 people who have had flights cancelled because of Monarch Airlines has gone out of business. 750,000 people who have had flights cancelled by Ryanair, despite which is still in business. How? I don't know. I think the truth will fall out of Ryanair one day. Let's just hope that truth doesn't fall from 45,000 feet. Yeah, so there you have it. Well, it's not on the end of the show, but stay tuned. Stay tuned. David RB is up at the top of the hour, so stay tuned. If the football's on, if you watch that nonsense, put it on. Turn the sound off. You don't need it on. Stay tuned to the tunes of David RB, and I guarantee it, you'll have a terrific evening. It'll possibly help with some alcohol along the way. Not just by David RB, I hasten to add. So there you go. I've set you up for the evening. Thanks for tuning in, and let's hope for the best for the posties tomorrow at the High Court. I'm sure the news will be coming out very swiftly across the internet and the airwaves. A big thank you to everyone. Chaz Summers, Big Daddy Rendell, David RB helped me produce the show, and I'll probably be here next week with some more news from the Big Debate here on Tracks FM. Thank you and good night.
Judge Jim's Big Debate on Tracks FM.